Has the job hunt worn you down? Application after application and radio silence. I know why you're here, and I can help you get there. A job offer, a job faster. You can now book me for $2 a minute for 30, 45, 60, or 90 minutes for a video chat interview preparation session. Don't need 45 minutes? Don't pay for it. Want to do 30 minutes now and maybe 30 minutes later once you progress? Let's do it. If you aren't getting responses to your application, we'll meet and rework your resume to get noticed. If you aren't passing job interviews, we'll work through a mock interview so you can put your best foot forward with winning responses that make a difference. I'm here to consult with you if you're in a unique situation and want input from someone that has seen it all and can help you succeed, like I have so many others. It's super simple. You just go to jobinterviewexperience.com and click the $2 minute coaching button at the top of the page, select the amount of time you want to meet, and then you can look through my availability without having to pay. Pick a time and pay $2 a minute for 100% of my attention. Check out the testimonials while you're there from listeners to this podcast that I've worked with in just the last couple of weeks. It's blocked into 30, 45, 60 minutes and more, so we won't go over. You won't get charged any more than what you pay for at checkout. Remember that the faster you invest in yourself, the faster you land that dream job. Go to jobinterviewexperience.com or follow the link in this episode's description. I'm excited to meet with you, help identify what's holding you back, and help you take control of your career today. One of the biggest questions for job seekers is, how much does this job pay, or how much can I make in a new field or new role? There are a lot of websites out there to research this, but it's hard. It's really hard to find accurate information. Our guest today helps HR professionals and consulting firms predict the future of pay. Cary Sparrow started his career as a nuclear submarine officer in the U.S. Navy. Thank you for your service, Cary. And then went on to have full careers in management consulting, IT, and HR. He now runs WageScape, the leading provider of real-time wage and hiring intelligence. Cary is going to share how the traditional boundaries that define career lanes have weakened or maybe been removed altogether, which is creating challenges for many businesses, but opportunities for you, the job seeker. We're also going to dig into why more companies are looking at what skills they need, researching information on wages, how those are evolving, and how careers have been altered significantly since the pandemic. Cary, welcome to the Job Interview Experience.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I read an overview of your career during the introduction. It's not a typical path to get to where you are today. How did you go from a nuclear submarine officer to running WageScape?
Yeah, some friends of mine call my career a bit of a purple squirrel, which is something that you never find, right? When I was going to school, I had a really intense interest in computers. And so I got it. My degree was in computer engineering, which at the time, this was forever ago, was a really new degree. And I went to a great school, and the Navy paid for my education. And so when I got out, I had the privilege of paying them back with a few years of service. And so I joined the submarine force. And because I also have kind of an adventuresome side to me and like the idea of serving in a way that was kind of forward. That's a pretty intense experience. It's a high operational tempo. You've got a lot going on at a very young age. You get a lot of responsibility. By the time I was 24, I was running nuclear power plants. I was overseeing the construction of nuclear power plants. I had people that reported to me millions of dollars of equipment that I was responsible for. I was responsible for minute-to-minute operations on a submarine in actual operational settings, doing the stuff the submarines do. I just thought that was kind of cool. It was my job. I didn't really think a lot about it. I had an opportunity to be a part of a headquarters command where at that point in time, the Navy was reorganizing some things. And so I was responsible for figuring out how to do the same with less resources, less facilities, and so forth for my last couple of years in the Navy were focused on that. And when I was getting out, I had no idea what I wanted to do. The stuff that seemed similar to what I had been doing were more operational jobs, but I got an interview with a management consulting firm And they asked me what I've been doing. And I'm like, yeah, I don't really know how this relates to you. I've got this reorganization that we're working on. And I explained that. And they go, that's interesting. That's kind of what we do. And fell in pretty well with that group. It fit really well with my orientation, which was in the submarine force, especially where I was, which was on fast attack submarines. You could get a call. You could come into work one morning and find out that you've got to be shipping out tomorrow to go do something pretty interesting and change your whole expectation. And consulting can be like that. And so that really appealed to me, and the ability to learn from a lot of different companies and to work with some really neat, extraordinarily smart people, all that appealed to me. So I did that, and it turned out I was pretty good at it. I started really junior and worked my way up and got to a point where I was an executive in the firm that I worked for. And, you know, I was a partner and I ran a line of business, and I was specializing in setting up HR functions and developing HR strategies, helping big companies do that, handling mergers, spinoffs, things like that. And got a call one day from a pretty big company that was looking for somebody to head up those kinds of activities on a global basis. And I thought that sounded kind of interesting. And at that point, I was ready to get off the kind of the lifestyle of being in consulting. And so I jumped over into the corporate side and worked in HR and IT to set up global organizations and put in global technologies and reconfigure kind of every aspect of workforce management, and did that for a while and learned a ton. And along the way, saw some opportunities that I thought represented pretty interesting market opportunities, specifically around data. Companies waste a ton of time trying to figure out what's going on in the market with jobs and with pay. And at the end of the day, the solutions they come up with aren't really that accurate. The data that's published isn't really that accurate. And I thought that there was a better way to do it. And as I asked other consulting firms and other technology firms what they were doing in this area, I was getting blank stares. And I thought, I can actually do this. And so I did. Founded WageScape 8 years ago. And started off with an idea and a lot of energy and a lot of curiosity, and got out and treated it really like finding a new job. And except in this case, it was about finding a job, which was running a business and making it successful. And so talked to tons of people I'd never met before, networked like crazy, people that had experiences that I'd never come across before, and learned how to do it along the way, and got a success. And then from that, use that to get another success. And from that, use that to get more successes. And now we got a team of about 20 people around the world, and we've got a pretty good brand, and it's growing. And the market is, especially after the pandemic, is intensely interested in what we do, which, like you said, is provide real-time insight on what jobs are getting hired, what skills are needed for those jobs, and who's doing the hiring and how much they're paying. It's on a good trajectory. But that's how I got there. It's just opportunistically making the most from any one situation and taking the skills that I learned and applying them in kind of surprising ways to the next situation.
You touched on it just a little bit there, but to add context for the rest of our conversation, can you share a little bit more about what is it that WageScape does and then the impact that has on job seekers or will have on our listeners today?
So to understand what WageScape does, it's important to contrast it to when a job seeker looks and tries to understand how much is a job going to get paid. Sometimes in a job advertisement, it'll say what ranges the company is willing to pay for the job. That's absolutely true if you're looking at a government job, and then in about 10% of the cases, it's true for other types of jobs. But if you don't have that, there are other resources that are available, online resources that you can look at. And where those folks get their data from is there are firms that will go out and ask companies how much they pay for given jobs. They'll consolidate all that information together, and then they'll publish it. And that's a survey process that takes like a year. The companies that are providing the input to it are basing it on pay levels at the time they fill out the survey, which reflect decisions that were made up to a year or even two before then. So it's really out-of-date data. And it's also, a survey process is a really intensive process. It takes a lot of hands, and it's very inefficient, and even in the most efficient survey processes. So the sample sizes aren't really that big. And you tend to see data on pay that is like at a national level, but pay conditions at a local level can be completely different. And so we take a totally different approach to that. We go and we scour all the online job listings, and we work with lots of different platforms, and we collect that information from about in the U.S., about 85% of all the new jobs that are being created. So a massive amount of information. And we dig into it. We're able to go beyond what's just written on the page and figure out what are companies really, you know, expecting to pay for this job, using some methods that, we had developed. And so we're able to get pay information on well over half the new jobs that are being created in the economy and at the individual job level. And then we put that together in a way that other companies can use to publish very specific pay rates, whether it's for a specific job, like a marketing manager at a given company in Dallas, Texas, or a medical assistant in Chicago downtown versus a medical assistant out in the suburbs of Chicago. We're able to get really precise on that, and then we provide that information to folks that build it into their applications, and they offer it as a very distinctive kind of real-time view of what's going on in the market. It's a very different way of looking at the market than what people are used to, and it's a way that is gaining traction really fast, because after the pandemic, wage inflation went through the roof. We've all experienced this, but just to put it in perspective, for the last 2 years, advertised wages have gone up 20% a year, okay? And for my entire life before then, except like in the 70s, wage inflation was running between 2 and 5% a year, right? And so now you got companies that are blowing the roof off of what they're willing to pay companies. And so suddenly, like, a machine shop in some city could easily found itself competing with quick service restaurants, fast food places, because the shortage of workers and what they had to do to attract the workers was causing pay levels to go up, so that now people had lots of different options in terms of where they go to work. And it required a fundamentally different way to look at kind of who's your competition for hiring jobs. It also presented career seekers or job seekers amazing opportunities from a career standpoint, because they didn't have to just think of themselves as being sequestered into whatever they had done before.
You provide the data that you collect to businesses, organizations. My guess would be maybe they use that to be competitive or to comply with maybe some local, state, or federal laws, things like that. Is that correct?
Yeah. So when we provide data to individual corporations, they're using it in order to compete for talent, to really understand who their competition is and what they have to pay for. Most of our clients, though, are other technology companies or consulting firms that help a much broader set of companies do the same thing, understand the markets that they're in and make proper decisions there. And sometimes those decisions are based on compliance. Sometimes they're based on social pressures like pay transparency and pay equity. We're seeing a big uplift in demand for our data for those two reasons. And in some cases, it's more on research. It's more to support a new way of kind of looking at, you know, what work looks like, especially around skills, because we were able to see what skills are being required for what jobs and how those trends are changing within industries or for within any kind of job. And a lot of folks are leaning into that. And so you've got new technologies that are hitting the scene that are all about kind of the market for skills. And we help those technologies quantify what's going on in the market. So not just speculate it, not just create some interesting kind of theoretical framework, but really bring massive amounts of market data to that question.
These organizations have access to that data. What about job seekers? Do you have any advice for a job seeker to get a better understanding of what maybe their income potential could be, whether it be in a current job, maybe in a new field, things like that?
It's going to require some homework. And more boards are providing more intelligence about what prevailing wages are. Now, the ranges tend to be a little bit wide on job boards, but we've got job boards as clients that take our data and then say, for a given job in a given market, here's what the pay range ought to be. So more and more, especially with pay transparency laws and practices, I mentioned social pressure coming to bear, more and more job boards and individual job advertisements are showing what the wages are. I think it's important to click down on that a level and really look at what are the jobs asking for. So I think job seekers have a great opportunity now to really translate their own interests into kind of new branches of their careers that may not have been defined before for them. So you've got new opportunities. You can look at new types of jobs that build off the skills that you already have. You have new skills that you could acquire to get the kinds of jobs that you want. And what's available online right now helps inform that. You really have to kind of take a discerning eye to to see what's available online. But there are a growing number of resources. If you go to any of the big job sites, I would fully take advantage of their resources to help understand kind of what's the market for skills look like and what are your opportunities there. The other thing that I don't think we mentioned yet is remote work. There's lots that's happening in the news about companies bringing people back in the offices and so, but at the end of the day, remote work is a trend that is never going to get reset back to what it was before the pandemic. And that means that geographically, job seekers have the opportunity to find work with companies in areas that are outside of their home city. They have the opportunities to be recruited by companies that are outside of their home city. And they've got some new skills that they've got to be able to demonstrate in those situations. The ability to build social capital within a remote team environment is increasingly important. And that's true for entry-level hourly positions all the way up to senior management positions. And if there's a component which is a working in a team setting, remote is a part of that. To recap a little bit, do your homework, absolutely. Don't box yourselves in. Would be another piece of advice. And leave yourself, really understand, kind of get in touch with what it is that really motivates you and the direction that you want to take without necessarily being anchored to what you've done in the past.
Carrie, you said something earlier I wanted to jump back on and get your opinion on. A lot of job seekers really struggle with the starting salary, right, for a job. They don't know what it is typically, depending on the state. And they think that it's kind of a, you tell me first, no, you tell me first. Overall, I think that companies actually, they want to pay good wages. An example of that is what you said, that they are paying you and your company to have access to that so that they can compete and hire people to solve the problem they have. So for a job seeker, and instead of looking at this as, oh, every company wants to pay me the minimum amount that they can, and that's why they're not telling me the salary and they want to know mine. Really, a different way to look at that is if they don't pay someone a fair wage, they're not going to get the best talent for a job. Do you think that's part of why they're paying you for this? Is so that obviously their dream isn't just to pay everyone as much as possible to make them happy, but they want to pay people, or they want to offer a good starting wage so they can acquire good talent. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, the reason that wages have been going up the last couple of years is because the entire business is in jeopardy because they're not able to get the talent that they need. And yeah, they want to manage the costs associated with their labor, so their labor costs and the individual wages. But the more important issue for almost every company is they need talent in order to grow and thrive as a business and in order to compete effectively. And if they don't, they're going to go out of business, literally are going to go out of business. And that's why competition for talent has gone way up. I think that the environment for job seekers is now totally different than it was 3 years ago. There's a lot more power with job seekers, but also there's some fundamentals that are not don't make it a slam dunk for anyone looking for a job. It still takes work. But for example, more and more states are requiring that you cannot ask salary history of job candidates. More and more states are requiring that you publish the pay ranges for jobs. But beyond just what the law states, the good companies have recognized those are trends that are not going to be reversed. And so they're adapting their hiring processes to be able to say, here's what job pays and here's what influences where we would pay you on the range, and be more transparent about that. Also, it's easier to be working with several companies and looking at several different opportunities. So one very kind of tried and true approach around understanding what's my fair value is to get multiple opinions. So In this environment, being able to get offers from multiple companies is a huge asset to a job seeker because it gives you better market insight and better leverage in pursuing the opportunity that's going to be best for you. So it's a different environment, but it's still, at the end of the day, companies are adapting their approaches. It's not everybody there, not even close to half of everybody is there in terms of pay transparency yet, but the trend is definitely moving in that direction. And I would say it should be at least a yellow flag if companies are not going to be transparent about what the wages are, because it's not because necessarily they're deceptive. In fact, I would say in most cases, that's not the case, but it would be a yellow flag to me because it means that they're missing out on what's going on in the broader context.
Can you dig in a little bit more to any trends you've identified or changes in careers that you've seen since, say, the year 2020?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch, and the symptoms show up in the press in different ways. There was the notion of the Great Resignation, where a lot of people were not coming back to work after the pandemic. And I don't think that's really proved out to be what happened. I think what actually happened was people weren't going back to bad jobs. There was this notion of people blamed different things. It was government unemployment checks and things like that. And no, it was companies had bad jobs, and expecting the workers to come back to bad jobs was an unrealistic expectation after you gave them the better part of a year or two to go and realize how to structure their lives around something that didn't include a bad job in it. So I think that companies are taking a harder look at what's in it for the employee, and employees are taking a harder look to say, how does my work fit within what I want from a life perspective? Everybody had given lip service to work-life balance before, but it really came to roost during the pandemic, and I think that's a really positive carryover from it. Remote work has changed how people are working and how organizations are setting themselves up. There's, on any given day, you'll hear some major well-known executive saying, we got to get our people back in the office, but the reality is people have been away from the office for 3 years now, and that horse isn't going to go back in that barn, I don't think. There are entire businesses that have been set up in the meantime to compete with virtual workforces, and the ability of a company that doesn't have to pay employees, doesn't have to pay for the space that employees occupy, their employees don't have to worry about how childcare and elder care and so forth fit into what they have to do for work. I think we're finding that they're at least as productive, meaning that they've got a lower cost structure and at least the same productivity. And so the folks that are driving hard to come back into the office, I think, are going to be significantly disadvantaged in those respects, and they better have something to make up for it.
Yeah, and they can only take talent from within maybe 20, 30 miles of their office location.
Well, and also, even within the 20 to 30 miles, if I had a choice, going back to the point of you have leverage when you have choices, if I have a choice between something that pays about, two things that pay about the same, maybe one is even a little less than the other, but I can have flexibility in my work hours, I don't have to invest in a wardrobe. I don't have to have 2 hours in the car every day commuting back and forth or in the train in some cities. I can fit childcare in on a much more flexible basis. And then you have another opportunity that pays, maybe it even pays a little bit more, but it's much more rigid in terms of work expectations and so forth. More and more individuals are going to take the more flexible approach. So that's one of the bigger things that has changed in the last couple of years. We already mentioned wage inflation, which is a reality. So a big resetting of what companies are paying is going on. And then the other one is companies are just getting much more in tune with what skills they need. So even two jobs could have exactly the same job title and require totally different things. And the whole lens of skills is something that's really being embraced, I would say. It's not fully mature yet, but it's really useful to be attuned to what skills you bring to the table and to use the language that companies use around those skills. If you're in IT, it's relatively easy to talk about the languages and the methods that you can use, the platforms that you've worked on and what you've studied. But outside of that, if you're looking, if you're in one field, like I have a number of friends that are first responders, and when they go to make a career transition, maybe they because you can retire at a relatively young age from that. A lot of times they're really frustrated because they're very nervous and very scared. And these are highly accomplished individuals that they don't know what table. They don't know what they look at job ads and say, I can't do any of that. And actually, they can do a lot of it. The ability to work under pressure, the ability to manage tasks, the ability to manage others, the ability to manage others from outside of your organization, the ability to deal with highly fluid, dynamic situations. Those are all real skills that companies need in operations roles and other types of roles. And as more and more companies push into skills, the ability to translate, you know, really understand what skills you have and express those in terms that other people can understand, I think, is a really important required asset of any job seeker, especially like mid-career and above.
Kerry, you mentioned the lens of skills and how that's creating opportunities for job seekers. And I think the big thing here is that a job seeker, for any of us, you don't know what you don't know. So how can someone dig into how to gain skills that align with their vocation or their natural talent how can you find out what companies are looking for, what skills are trending, and maybe what direction they should start heading to for their next job?
So there are more resources available online specifically around that question, which, and those resources could come from universities, from their career resources. It could come from like job boards and other sites that serve job seekers, and it could come from like industry associations and so forth, which are helping both hiring companies and job seekers translate skills into kind of the optimal path. But the biggest thing I would really suggest is the one that today is the most overlooked, which is get out and talk to people. As a job seeker, you have an amazing opportunity to meet interesting people. And in my experience, most people are more than happy to give you a little bit of their time to provide advice in terms of what is it like to work in my company? What is it like to work in my profession with my job? What changes have happened? What skills could I really focus on? What advice do you have to give in terms of opportunities that I could have? I've talked to hundreds of people and have benefited from the extraordinarily generous contributions of people that I had never met before the course of my career. And I'd encourage everybody to do that because it's also, frankly, a really effective way to find a job. There are resources available online, but if you really want to be effective at understanding what's out there and at the same time advance your insights in terms of where there are jobs that you might be interested in that would be interested in you, get out and talk to people.
You mentioned some of the benefits of working remote earlier. The downside of working remote is how competitive it is for that one or a couple roles that are open, is people are applying obviously from, you know, all over the nation or maybe all over the world. Do you know of any strategies for job seekers that are looking to work remote to stand out and to at least be seen and hopefully get hired?
You know, actually, my experience and in talking with other CEOs of companies that help connect job seekers to hiring organizations, one of the biggest challenges is the attention of the job seeker themselves. A lot of times, in fact, it's kind of the norm now that when a company identifies that they're interested in you, a lot of job seekers don't respond to those opportunities or they will stop discussions very early, a lot of times without even letting the company know why. They'll just disappear. And yes, there's a part which is about getting discovered, which it, you know, and I think a good strategy there is just tenacity, to be honest with you. I think that there's a part of this which is understand what you want, what you're looking for, and then go and show up in terms of demonstrating your interest for that again and again, and get used to the idea that most companies are not necessarily going to be looking for you. But if you do that enough, it's like sales, right? It's exactly like sales because you're selling yourself. And in sales, anyone in sales knows they get told no way more than they get told yes. And that's the same thing for job seekers. But when a company is interested in you, you've got a perfect opportunity to really show up and demonstrate that you're interested in them. Do your homework, ask good questions, ask for advice, make sure that they understand kind of that they're asking good questions about you because it's a two-way interview. So I think that now is as good a time as ever, even if you're looking at remote jobs, and there's lots of remote jobs out there, even if they don't advertise as remote. So a lot of jobs are remote. Or at least hybrid.
What's the best way for listeners to connect with you and Wagescape?
Yeah, so you can reach us online. We've got our website is wagescape.com, and we're on LinkedIn, we're on Twitter or X, and I'm also, you can reach me directly on LinkedIn as well.
Fantastic. We'll link to that Wagescape URL in this episode's description, and you can find Cary Sparrow on LinkedIn as well. Before we close here, do you have any final words of wisdom or motivation for our seekers as they take in this information and get back into the job search?
I'm a guy that the glass is always at least half full, but I honestly believe right now is the best time that I've ever seen in my life. If you're a job seeker, to chart your own course. And if that's exciting to you, you have so many different opportunities. The world is literally your oyster bed, not just one oyster. It's tons of oysters to discover what's in it. So take full advantage of that, embrace it. Don't feel bound. The idea of kind of a traditional career is really something that I think a lot of people have moved beyond, and that creates great opportunities.
Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate you being here.
Hey, it's been a pleasure talking to you guys.